Bankless Nation, it happened. The Ethereum ETF has been officially approved. Last week, all the best ETF analysts told us ETF approval was just not happening. But then today, it happened. We got a complete 180 pivot from the SEC. So David and I were on a live stream. We were just like waiting and watching for this to happen. It was like watching paint dry. And we were about to leave the live stream. David had to go do something when we got this confirmation tweet from Bloomberg analyst James Seifert. I want to play a clip of what that felt like.
Guys, we got to go do things. I'm sorry, we have to go.
You guys, man the screens for us, okay? Yeah. And let us know. I'll be checking my phone. Don't.
James Seifert. James Seifert Twitter.
Don't.
James Seifert Twitter.
We were about to log off. I can't deal with another false alarm, David.
It's approved.
Shut up.
Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go.
James, get him on. Get him on. Get him on the podcast. So we did get James on the podcast shortly after that. That's actually the episode you are about to hear. And I'm sure you heard the excitement in our voices. And here's why we were excited. Number one, this clarifies Ethereum status in the US. It's never had this before, but Ethereum can no longer be called a security. In any courtroom, in any institution, anywhere, Ether the asset is a commodity in the US, and that is big. Number two, this creates a massive new pipeline of capital to flow from TradFi to Ethereum. That's big in and of itself. And number three, and I think in some ways this was the biggest, this is regulatory relief to a crypto industry that has been under relentless assault from the US government, and in particular, from the SEC. And here's the biggest thing. I think probably the most exciting thing about this news, and you heard it in our voices, we helped to make this happen. And by we, I mean us. I mean you. I mean the Bankless Nation. I mean the crypto community. Our voice, our votes, our actions actually put political pressure on the SEC chair, Gary Gensler, to last minute approve an ETF that he wanted nothing more than to deny. The battle's not over for crypto. We've got many fights ahead, but let's enjoy this victory for a moment. We've got Bloomberg analyst James Seifert coming right up. He tells us how this story happened, how the Ethereum ETF approval unfolded, and what to expect next. So we talk price, we talk inflows, we talk who are the issuers, we talk a future staked ETH ETF, when we can expect to see that, and also what the next crypto ETF might look like. So let's get right into the episode with James. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this possible, including our number one recommended crypto exchange for 2024, that is Kraken. Go create an account.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Launching a token? Worried about the IRS? Talk to Toku for 5 minutes to learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, your team, and your investors. Now, if you do an initial consultation, Toku will cover the cost of your token valuation, which is what you need for your launch. So don't wait. Reach out to the team right now at team@toku.com. That's team@toku.com.
Bankless Nation, we've got a breaking live stream. We've got James Seyfert over here. He is an analyst at Bloomberg. He is an ETF expert. And we just got some incredible news, exciting news, I think, for the crypto community. James, what just happened?
Yeah, I mean, the SEC came out and just accelerated and approved every ETH filing that got in their 19b4. So this is a 19b4 order. And what that really is... it's a rule change proposal. Basically, all these exchanges, they had to do this with the Bitcoin ETFs too. You have to basically submit these filings and ask the SEC to change a rule. In this case, the rule is we want to trade Ethereum ETFs. In the case of Bitcoin, it was we want to trade Bitcoin ETFs. And the SEC has to go through and basically say this is allowed. So this is the first step. There's two main steps before these things can begin trading. And this is number one.
So this is the number one. It's also the big one, right? Because it's the thing that has been the... SEC has been reluctant to say. So that's the 19B. I think we've got some of the issuers on the screen, but I think there's maybe more. You mentioned, did you say 17, 19, something like this? We've got a number of them on the screen.
No. That's all of them plus the Grayscale Mini, but actually Hashdex didn't submit a 19B4. So they're not actually going to launch one, it doesn't look like.
Okay, so are there more issuers, fewer issuers, or is this pretty much similar to the issuers for the Bitcoin ETF?
There are less issuers here, and especially if you take into account. So, right, if you include Grayscale. So, Grayscale, everyone's been talking about that Bitcoin mini trust. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar, but especially they're spinning out 10 or 15% of GBDC into this smaller ETF. It's called the Grayscale Mini Bitcoin
like
Trust.
Like low and fees and such, right?
Exactly. We don't know exactly the fee. I think people are saying it's going to be 15 basis points, but it's going to be the lowest fee. They're doing the same thing with ETH, and they filed that in here. So that's also going to launch at some point in the near future. Essentially Grayscale is going to launch two of these things. I don't know if the ETH mini trust is going to be included. I haven't had a chance to really dive deep into this filing since it just dropped, but I've skimmed through it. There's a lot here to go through. There's 23 pages. So, as soon as we get off of this, I'm going to basically have to dive into that.
Okay. So when you say boom approved, you're talking about all of those filings were just approved all at once. I think this is pretty crazy because of the setup here, which is it was like Friday of last week. It looked like none of this stuff was going to be approved, right? Like you didn't see any movement on your side as you're going through the paperwork and stuff. Here's a tweet from Friday, which is, it's just not happening, guys. Sorry. And I think you tweeted that, James, because like it didn't look like it was happening. I guess the broadest of questions here, did the SEC just do like a 180 on this? Or like, what is going on? How did we get from here? It's not happening. There's no signs of movement to Monday. Suddenly, it was, I think either you or Eric Balchunas had tweeted this out where, your probability of approval just shot up to 75% on Monday when like on Friday, it was like near zero.
Yeah. So early afternoon, we started to hear rumblings. We were like, this can't be true. Can it? Like, can this actually be happening? And like, we were scrambling. So we know people that are like somewhat in the process. Some people are like outside, but kind of know what's going on. We have a lot of people we talk to in the space. Obviously, there's a lot of signs and tea leaves we read, but we also have sources that we're talking to try to make sure we're getting this stuff right. And we had one or two people tell us, yeah, something's happening. And then we got more and more people be like, yeah, this is insane. I can't believe this is happening. And that was Monday afternoon. And that's when, so Eric and I actually were on the phone for like 30 minutes going over like fine tooth comb about exactly what we wanted to tweet because we knew it was going to be market moving. We actually offered it to Bloomberg News and they didn't want to put it out there yet. So
because they, because it seemed so tenuous, it seemed so odd, it
exactly.
seemed so last minute.
But we trusted our sources. And obviously we didn't think it was going to happen. As you see, I tweeted that on Friday. Life comes at you fast. But
what explains this?
It's the political winds. It has to be. Like people are trying to say this was always the case. Like that is not what happened here. This is a complete shift. From what I understand, specifically the division that approves those 19B4s, they're called the Division of Trading and Markets. They're mainly worried about fair, efficient, orderly markets. Like that's what their whole thing is. And with these 19b4s, they want to make sure there's no fraud, manipulation, things like that. So these ETFs, these products can't like help other people commit fraud and manipulation or get stuck with other people doing fraud and manipulation. That's what most of this is about. That division, from what we hear, didn't like know about this until late last week. Like they were under the assumption they were denying. So like It's not like the SEC knew this was going to happen all the time. Based on everyone I'm talking to, this is a complete political shift. And if you just look at everything else that has happened here, like you look at some of the polling for the elections, you look at the SAB 121 votes in the House and then the Senate, and then you look at what happened today with the FIT 21 Act, which is a market structure bill for crypto. Trump saying he's pro crypto here, and like there's so many things that point to like the Dems basically decided like we can't go this way. So I'll be interested to see. At some point, we'll get. There was probably a vote on this. So
like, basically, the last vote was like 3-2, right? And Gensler was the kind of the breaking tie vote because what is it? The commissioners have to vote. Each of the SEC commissioners have to vote. And two voted no for the Bitcoin ETF. Three voted yes, and the third was Gary Gensler. So did this break a similar way, or do you know yet?
We don't know. Okay. Though at some point we'll find out. I don't know exact timelines of that. It's not on the site now. I just checked like literally 3 seconds ago. But essentially, the commission is a 5-member commission, 2 Dems, 2 Republicans, and then usually whoever the president is at the time gets to pick the commissioner, which is usually a tiebreak. So the commissioner gets to decide where things go. But it's not impossible to have people break. So it'll be very interesting to see how this goes down. So Liz Araga and Crenshaw, the 2 Dems other than Gensler. And if one of them, there's no way it was Crenshaw, but she wrote a dissent letter. She voted no on that. And then she wrote a dissent letter. Liz Araga did not join her in that dissent letter for approving spot Bitcoin ETF. So it's theoretically plausible that Gensler was planning to deny and the other Dem commissioner wanted to do it. But this is all just speculation. So it'll be interesting to see.
So you think this was politically motivated, and that's how it seems. This is how most of the crypto community is sort of interpreting this. But it would also be odd, and I don't expect anyone at the SEC to acknowledge this, least of all Gensler, even if that's what really happened. If what really happened was like some phone call that he got or the SEC got that told them that, hey, this is not worth losing an election over, that won't be acknowledged, I've got to imagine, because the SEC is supposed to be politically neutral. It's supposed to be a merit-based regulator that looks at the law and approves or denies these things based on their reading of the rules and the law and doesn't get involved in the politics. So that would be contrary to what they say. I can't imagine they would say, hey, it looked like Biden was going to lose an election here, or it could cost him some votes, and so therefore we decided to approve it, right?
Supposed to be is the key word you use there, right? And I don't think it's just about the presidential election. I think there's Senate and House elections that people realize they actually care about this. I don't remember exactly who tweeted it, but it's like, I don't know if the numbers are right, but there's thousands of people who are very staunchly pro crypto at the very least. Like, so, and it's an orders of magnitude greater than the people that are staunchly anti. Like they're very vocal, but there's just not many people that care about it in a great way. And I think that kind of got through in the last month or so. And they couldn't let the Republicans do an end around on them on this piece, right? Do I think the Dems are going to come around and just be completely pro crypto now? Absolutely not. Are they going to be as staunchly against? I don't think so. I think this is a tide shift, a complete pivot, a 180 from the Dems here.
I mean, James, this feels really good to a lot of people listening in the crypto community. Feels like in a world where we don't feel like we have much political agency, it feels like we really had an effect. Like the crypto vote, the crypto community had their voice heard in DC, maybe turned the tide on this. On as late as Friday, this wasn't going to happen. And then things changed and now it's happening, likely due to politics. I want to ask you the question though, as to when these ETF products might become available, because you said there's two pieces. And you said the 19B4 filings were all approved today, but there's another piece, I believe, before we could start getting these products out there into like Fidelity accounts, into the RIAs and all of this. What's the time lag from here until these products actually get released in the market?
One, you're 100% correct. And two, the real short answer is we have no idea. That's a lie. We have some idea, but we really don't know. There's not a ton of precedent here, obviously. But even if you ask me Monday morning, like, is there any way they can approve? I would have said, no way. They don't have enough time to do it. There's just not enough time to do it. It usually takes weeks, if not months, to get an approval order. But I guess they can work fast when they have to, right? When they're up against a deadline. So the other process is they need the S1 approvals or the prospectus documents, offering documents, depending on what you're used to hearing. But they're just the documents that have all the risk disclosures, exactly how the trust is going to operate. Anyone involved with the fund That's what's going to be in these documents. And the SEC's Division of Corporate Finance, which is another division, not Trading and Markets, this is a separate division that has to go through those with a fine-tooth comb. And these documents are hundreds of pages in many cases. So this is not something that's going to happen overnight. I think if they really want to accelerate it, the gap between the 19b4 approval and the S1 approval could be weeks. But there are plenty of examples of this taking months. Like there's examples of it taking 5 months. I think they'll be faster than that. The Bitcoin ETFs, for example, we know they started in early October and then they were approved in early January, which is 3 months, 90 some odd days. I think it'll be faster than that, like I said. I just don't know. We'll have a better idea in the coming week or two, but we just don't know yet.
So we don't quite know when exactly the pipeline will open to all of this capital. Though that said, this does feel like Ethereum is clearly in the territory of commodity now. If the SEC is even capitulating on this and like approving a spot Ethereum ETF, it's going to be basically impossible for the SEC to come back later and argue that Ethereum was an ETF all along. I want to ask the question of what we might expect with respect to inflows. And I think the Bitcoin ETF has performed above and beyond even what some of the like the biggest bulls were predicting in terms of inflow. Am I right in saying like I'm looking at a screen here? Are we at like close to like 60 billion in terms of total AUM and market cap? Are these numbers correct here?
Yeah, those numbers are correct. They're like 59 billion ish right now.
And like gold is like
13 billion.
Gold is like what, like 90 billion, something like this? Like we're in
it's around 100. It's just 100. Shy of 100, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So what do we expect if we've got benchmarks for Bitcoin? It's just launched this year and we're already at like 60 billion. Gold is 100 billion. What do we expect for Ethereum? Do we have any way of knowing this?
Yeah. So, I mean, the two things is one, a lot of those assets came over with GBTC, right? So GBTC came over with like 30 billion in assets when it converted. So like just going on assets isn't necessarily the strongest way to do it because that's like a massive head start, right? So if we go on flows, I think that's the better way to do it. And if we look at ETH, which is converting, that has about 11 billion in assets. So that converts over, that's 11. But if you just look at flows, the net flows, the ETFs so far in the first, how many months are we in? 4 months of trading, almost five. They're about 13 billion. I think the number, the flows that are going to come into these Ethereum ETFs are probably going to be something like 20% of the flows that went into Bitcoin. And I'm going to explain those numbers. So my colleague Eric Bacunas thinks like 10 to 15. I think more like 20. Who actually
percent
knows?
You're talking about, yes.
Percent of the flows, yeah. So okay. If say it was 10 billion, so we're talking about a billion to 2 billion maybe. Of flows that would come in over the first couple months. And some people were like jumping down our throats, like, that's crazy, it's going to be way higher. But I think people are just, those Bitcoin ETFs, those flows were, they broke every single record in the book, right? Like first, almost the fastest to a billion. They were the fastest to 10 billion. IBIT did it in 49 days, the previous record, 49 trading days. Previous record was like 650 trading days. That's like 3 years. So like they did it. And it's just not even comparable, right? So like those numbers, even if you do 10%, that's a very successful launch. But the reason I think 10% is if you look at ETH versus the market cap of Bitcoin, what, 30% right now? I think the number is going to be less than that ratio for a few reasons. One, you lose less with a Bitcoin ETF or Bitcoin going into an ETF wrapper than you do with ETH going into an ETF wrapper. The first and obvious one is none of these allow staking. So like you're giving up that staking yield by not staking your ETH if you're holding it as an investment. The other thing is there's a lot more utility with ETH. Like you guys, you're going to use things to do different DeFi protocols, NFTs, you name it. Like it's just way more, there's way more utilitarian value of an Ethereum token, right, in my view. So like that's just going to decrease the interest in ETH as an ETF wrapper. That's my personal view. So that's why I think you have to discount that. Again, 30% of the Bitcoin size, I think it's going to be less than that number. I just don't know how much less.
So what does that come out to? So if we get the 10 billion from just like Grayscale kind of converting over, what does this come out to? Like about, you know, like 15 billion all told, something like that compared to Bitcoin 60 billion?
Yeah, 10 to 15 probably.
10 to 15 in that range. Is it also fair to say that TradFi and like the institutions understand Ethereum less like relative to Bitcoin? And what do you think the education campaign is like that's going to happen? Because we saw this, we saw it with, you know, once Fidelity had a Bitcoin ETF, it was sort of like all these papers and just like learn about Bitcoin, all of this educational material kind of went forward. Do you think something similar will happen? And do you think that there's some opportunity for Ethereum to be more broadly understood as a result of this? Because maybe TradFi just like doesn't understand it in comparison to Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I think that's part of it, right? There's just less interest, I guess I would say, overall, from my experience, talking with people in the TradFi world, in the institutional world, there's just less interest in ETH. Like it's also easier to understand like digital gold, call option, a store of value. The ETH story is way more complicated in my view. Digital scarcity is very simple to explain. It's like way simpler to explain Bitcoin. And a lot of people, like when they hear crypto, they just think Bitcoin in the space. Not all. There's plenty of people that are educated. There are plenty of people that are interested in this. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look at this and be like, all right, I already have Bitcoin as a part of my portfolio. I should diversify my digital asset exposure. And now that ETH are coming, I'm going to put some money in there. There are some people, obviously, that are going to think that they prefer ETH over Bitcoin. But I just think those numbers aren't going to be like massive, I guess, is the answer. But at some point, who's saying that can't change? But right now, based on all of my experience and interactions with different people, there's just less demand. And if you look at what happened, so in Hong Kong, they launched Bitcoin and ETH. ETH is that they have the assets, 20%, a little less than 20%, I think is the number. I haven't checked in a couple of days of the Bitcoin ETFs. And if you look at the Ethereum futures launch here that happened in early October of 23, they did nothing. Like I had very low expectations for the futures ETFs, and they did even worse than my expectations as far as flows go. The complete dud. No one really even cared at all. So I think that just kind of is all pointing to the fact that this is going to be not as big as the Bitcoin launches.
It's going to take longer for TradFi, I think, to understand Ethereum. It's got some more complexities. And two more questions, James, and then I'll let you go. The part of that education process, probably the upside of that for something like Ethereum is that it gets a couple shots at this. So first, of course, there's the vanilla Ethereum ETF. And then at some point, there's got to be, I imagine, a staked version of an Ethereum ETF. And once you get into a staked version of an Ethereum ETF, then you start getting into a different narrative conversation, I would imagine, which is like, hey, yield-bearing, productive asset type of conversation. But realistically, how far are we away from some sort of next approval of a yield-bearing Ethereum staked ETF? Is that like months out? Is that years out? Does that require another round of approval process? What do you think that looks like?
So one, it probably would require another round of approval process. These do not allow staking, these 19b4 orders. So I believe you would have to file another. You would have to go through the SEC again to basically say that can we use staking? They're not allowing it right now. One of my theories, even back when we thought these ETFs were going to be approved, was we had low odds of these getting approved, but I had extremely low odds of these ETFs allowing staking. I never expected that to happen. Not initially. One of my pet theories is everyone, I'm sure you remember back in early May, late April, everyone's like, oh my God, they're going to go after ETH and call it a security here. That's why Guns was talking to Consensus. That's what the Consensus lawsuit that they filed were trying to say.
That's what Joe Lubin literally thought. He was like, they're coming after Ethereum as a security. And I think he might've been right about that before the political tides changed.
I think they were dotting their I's and crossing their T's and trying to look for a way. My theory was, I never really thought they were going to call ETH a security in what they were going to do as denials. I think they were going to kick it down the road. It opens up a massive can of worms with the CFTC, with the futures market. If they call it a security and they're deemed correct, you have to shut down the futures because the futures are the ETH futures on the CME are registered as commodities futures. So you can't. That's
would
not
have been
allowed.
A mess for them.
So then,
I guess.
Yeah. So then the futures would be delisted. Then the futures ETFs would be delisted. My pet theory, and I've said this in podcasts before, is I thought they were going to basically try to thread this needle and say that ETH itself, they're not going to call a security, but staked ETH might be a security. And they obviously have problems with staked ETH. You look at what they're in the Coinbase lawsuits, the Kraken lawsuits, you look at all these different things. They think staking is a security. And I don't think they're going to give that up anytime soon. So that's broadly my expectation. We need some clarity. And obviously with the changes right now going on in Congress, maybe that like provides and speeds up some of that clarity.
Well, that's right. It does feel like the individuals can think what they want, but it sounds like they can bend to the political pressure as well. Okay. So last question for you, James, and then I'll let you go. I know you want to run through these like filings. Are there any other ETFs on the horizon, particularly this cycle? So people see Bitcoin, they see Ethereum. This is happening like relatively close, months apart. So then they think, what else could get an ETF? Is anything close, or like, can you just refresh people on how this actually works and like how it would happen, what signs to look for?
Yeah. Before I even get there, I want to hit on something that I just thought about. You asked about the security stuff. These things are commodities-based trust shares. So the SEC, by approving these, is explicitly saying they're not going to go after ETH itself as a security. So that's one thing I would just say real quick, because the part of the approval process here is they're approved as commodities trusts. Like this is pretty much a done deal. I will say, personally, I believe the ICO was a securities offering, but that's
that's a long time ago. That was 8 years ago now, right?
Yeah. And then, so what's next? Not much. I don't think anything's happening remotely soon. You need a regulated futures market, a federally regulated futures market, or something, or surveilled futures market, before you can get an ETF. That's clear. I skimmed the document that was in there blatantly. So the reason these are getting approved is because of the CME ETH futures market. There's a lot of questions about what's going to be deemed a security or a commodity with these other assets. There are some that are like pretty much accepted as commodities here. Like, ironically enough, Doge is almost certainly not going to be deemed a security. Make the same argument. Litecoin's probably in the same camp. No way to know for sure, but those theoretically have the less hard regulatory approval path. But also, like, is the CME really going to launch Doge futures? Maybe. I mean, Coinbase, I think, might be trying. Those would be theoretically CFTC regulated. So that could satisfy that. The next one that most people would think about is Sol, which I've seen a lot of talk about that. Again, you need a regulated market. Unless, like, even if Congress steps in and does something and clarifies what's a commodity and what isn't, like, even if these things are deemed to be a commodity, it's not just getting approved because it's a commodity. The SEC needs somewhere they can surveil. So you need to get some spot markets under surveillance with the SEC, or you need a regulated futures market. And even then, it's not like you get futures and then you automatically get the ETF. Like, you need some history. These ETH futures listed in 2019, I think, or something like that. It's like 20, I don't even know when it was. It might've been 2021, but you need more history. You need significant capital there. Like, if there's $100 million in like some, like, I don't know, some random tokens futures contract, and it trades like a little bit every day, like, that's never going to get approved. Like, they're looking at 1 minute candles for correlation to approve these things, and something that's not trading enough or doesn't have enough assets is not going to help them, you know, surveil and look for fraud and manipulation. So, I don't think that part of this is ever going to change no matter what Congress does, but they could theoretically push some of this along.
Absolutely monumental week here, James, with the approval of the Ethereum ETF, the second crypto asset to be approved in the US as an ETF, and clearly demarking both Bitcoin and Ethereum as not securities, which is something that we've wanted certainty from and clarity from our regulators for a very long time. So certainly bullish. Also bullish that we can politically push things in the right direction. Is there anything else you would leave folks with? Any other lessons from this or the week? You got to be exhausted, man. You going to get some rest after all this, or what are you doing next?
I'm going to be reading these documents, which
you sound so weary. It's probably not the week you thought it would be, huh? Different week.
No, not at all. But I will be in Consensus next week. So in Austin. So are you going to be there? I obviously know David will be there. Well, so
David is scheduled for a boxing match. So, and I'm scheduled
I'm going
to
be there
from the comfort of my office, actually live stream that. So I'll be here, but if he's there, I'm sure I'll be there and he'll say hello. James, this has been great. Where can folks follow you for future updates too?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a terminal client, I have like a whole bunch of clients responding to me, so I have to reach out to them right now, but that's the fastest, easiest way and quickest where I'll reply. After that, for people who don't, it would definitely be Twitter. I'm fairly active there, as probably you and many people know. So JSEYFF. We share a little bit of our research and our work and immediate update stuff, but the real bulk and body of our efforts are unfortunately behind the paywall of the Bloomberg terminal. So if you have access to one, that's where you can find us easiest.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, James. Thanks for keeping us up to date on all of this and on a successful week. Congratulations, another ETF in the world. I know you're an ETF maximalist, so it's a good thing from your perspective. And we certainly appreciate it at Bankless as well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Good to see you, Ron.
See you later.
New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. Driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo Layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums. Follow Celo on Twitter and visit celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.